He said, I need currency. Already got too much to trade and not enough space to hold it. What about jewellery? It's small, easily converted to coin. True. He played with the brim of his hat as he thought. It'd depend on the jewellery, I suppose, and we'd have to settle on a higher amount then, to offset exchange fees and inconvenience. How much higher? I felt like the solution to my problems was right in front of me, except that solution was like water. Each time I tried to grasp it, it slipped through my fingers. And, Jago walked away and resumed pacing. Even if I get my money back from Orla, I still have to pay for transport south through some other means. That's another fee. Are you trying to gouge us? We need to get to Denham. And you think I don't? I think you could show a little more heart, I said lamely. A headache was building, as was my frustration. I knew, ultimately, if he was fixed on going, no deal of mine would matter. Jago tapped his chest. I've got plenty, believe me. It gave a little pitter-patter when I saw you at my door, even. But go ahead, give me your last best shot. Move me to tears and tell me why you're really so anxious to get to Cape Triumph. And don't say to get away from the heirs, because we all want to do that. Gripping the windowsill, I looked outside again as I collected my thoughts. I couldn't see the horses anymore. Move me to tears. He joked, but I might very well do it if I told him about Mary. And yet, how could I? I'd clung to my secret so fiercely that I hadn't even revealed it to my best friends, ruining a friendship as a result. Why would I give everything up to a stranger? To find husbands, I said at last. We've been at a finishing school of sorts for the last year. It's called the Glittering Court. They bring girls from Arsfrid and show us off at dinners and balls in the hopes of meeting wealthy suitors. Silence. It dragged on and on. Mystified, as it was the longest he'd gone without talking, I turned around to see what had happened. Bewilderment filled those green and gold eyes. That, he said, is incredible. A glimmer of hope reared up in me. Then you'll help us? What? No, of course not. I just mean it's incredible that that's the argument you're trying. Look, I feel sorry for you and your situation. Really, but come on. A month or so from now, you're on the road. 2 more months, you're back with this glittering core, wearing bright colours again and drinking champagne with some man who wants to keep you in luxury for the rest of your life. And you know what? The more I describe it, the more I don't think I actually do feel sorry for you. In fact, I feel less guilty for refusing you now than I did before. The crumbling of my financial future is much more tragic than you having to wait a little longer to practice what I'm sure are formidable flirting skills with rich men. You know, some might even say you are the one lacking in heart for even suggesting this to me. You don't know anything about me! My pulse quickened with outrage, and I balled my fists at my side. Jago threw his hands up. I gave you a chance to tell me. Frustrated tears pricked my eyes, and I stormed off to examine the closest stack of crates before he noticed. One box held a jumble of yarn skeins, suspenders, tin cups, and a few toys. I lifted out a wooden doll and ran my fingers over her face, painted with bright blue eyes and pink cheeks. I'd saved for a second-hand doll very like this one for Mary's last birthday, and I felt an unbearable tightness in my throat, thinking how she was going to turn 4 without me. I'd written her pages of birthday wishes before I left Arsfro, and scraped up a little money for gifts to leave in Ma's safekeeping. Over and over, I'd reminded myself the heartache would all be worth it when Mary and I were together in Cape Triumph. Except I was here, in Grushend, with no escape in sight. The floor creaked with Jago's footsteps, and I sensed him stopping just behind me. When he spoke, his voice was soft. Why did Orla even offer this to you? She doesn't usually go out of her way to help colonists. I don't know. It hadn't fully struck me how strange this deal of hers might be. We travelled together. I gave her some arnica. That's it. For a good price, I could probably have beat it. Trust me. Jacob Robinson isn't going to get you to Cape Triumph. That's all you can say. I set the doll down and stomped toward the door. Goodbye, Mr. Robinson. If you can't sell the seats, that's fine, but I'm not some travelling act that came by to give you a little entertainment this afternoon. This is my life, my world, not some joke. He scurried over, the crooked smile vanishing. Now, wait, I never said this was a joke. No, you just acted that way. I came here to make you a serious offer, a very fair one, I might add. And now, because you thought it was funny to toy with me, I'll probably be late for dinner. They'll have me writing scripture all night now. Oh, don't leave like this. He searched around and snatched up the ribbons. Take these, at least. 2 for 1. Good day, Mr. Robinson. I jerked the door open and then paused in the doorway, glancing back over my shoulder. And just so you know, I didn't charge her anything for the arnica. Can you beat that deal? I slammed the door and hurried to the road, afraid he'd come after me. The dark clouds had spread fully across the sky, which complemented my mood nicely. Scattered snowflakes drifted down, and I kicked at dead leaves and clumps of ice as I walked, trying not to scream my outrage to the world. Not that there was anyone to hear. Once I returned to the creek road and continued toward the coal house, I saw no other homes or farms. Maybe a good yell would make me feel better. No, nothing was going to make me feel better. Perhaps it had been too much to hope that a stranger would help me, and Jago was right that I wasn't exactly asking a small thing. The Ikori River route was even more valuable than I'd originally believed, now that I understood more about northern travel. Even those who braved the roads couldn't move the amount of cargo the river barges could. Jago had every right to want to hold on to his prize. But he could have been nicer about the whole thing. I brushed snow out of my eyes and secured my cloak. He hadn't actually been mean, I supposed. Not exactly. Mocking? That was closer. Had he ever, at any point, seriously considered helping me? He just thought I wanted a faster way to dresses and champagne. How could he know I was trying to get to the person I loved most, who needed me most, in the world? I felt a pang, thinking again about Mary's upcoming birthday. I'd left Ma with reams of letters and what presents I could muster. Had it been enough? Did Mary even care about the letters I took such pains to write? Maybe she didn't even listen when they were read aloud. She was so, so young. Young enough to not understand a lot of things. Young enough to forget things more easily than adults did. Her safety and well-being were always foremost in my thoughts, but they were followed closely by a deep fear that maybe, after all I was going through, Mary was forgetting me. The wind jerked my hood down, and I stopped to refasten it. As I did, I stepped out of the dark spiral in my head and got a good look at what was going on around me. It was snowing. Really snowing. Those whimsical little flakes that had first fallen when I left Jago's had given way to a steady, thick snowfall that was rapidly accumulating. The dirt road was already almost completely covered. I resumed my trek, suddenly very conscious of everyone saying how unpredictable the blizzards around here were. I couldn't have much farther to go, though. I had a pretty clear sense of the way the roads were laid out, and even though I hadn't taken this one earlier, I knew by where it intersected the others that there wasn't much more than half a mile to the coal house. I just had to stay on the road. The wind played hide-and-seek, sometimes keeping still for a while, and then gusting with such fierceness that it nearly knocked me off my feet. I wished I'd thought to ask Jago for mittens. He probably could have given me an amazing deal. Thicker and thicker the snow grew. It coated my lashes, and the increasingly frigid air froze my nose and mouth. But what was most concerning was that I hadn't reached Samuel's house yet. I was certain I should have seen it by now, unless my calculations were radically off. That seemed unlikely. This was far simpler than the labyrinth of Astro's streets, and I was sure the house would pop up any minute. But would I know it? The highway I'd walked into town ran in front of the Cole property. This creek road ran behind it. Samuel's house was one of the bigger ones in Constancy, and would be easy to spot from a distance, unless your visibility had been severely damaged. I looked around at the swirling white world. What should I do? I couldn't be sure yet that I really had missed the house, so backtracking seemed premature. But if I had gone past it, then what was going to happen to me if I kept going? The cobbler had said he lived along it, so maybe I'd come across his home, or any home. But what if I didn't? What if the creek road meandered out of town, and I ended up wandering, lost in the woods? You wouldn't wander long, a helpful inner voice pointed out. You'd freeze to death first. With no answers, I kept trudging forward. I could still see the shapes of trees along the roadside, and I checked closely for any sign of a larger building beyond them. The stinging snow made it difficult to focus, and each time I tried to brush my eyes clean, tears would freeze around them. Twice, I almost walked off the road, and didn't realize it until a tree materialized right in front of me. Between the wind and visibility, it was getting hard to even move in a straight line down the road. I had to have passed the Cole house. I needed to turn around. The cold began to numb my mind as well as my body. An overwhelming urge to just sit down while I figured things out spread over me. I was so tired. A small rest would help me make a decision. No, Tamsin, if you give up now, you'll never make it to Cape Triumph. Are you going to abandon Mary because of a little snow? The thought slapped me to attention as my knees started to buckle. I straightened up and gritted my teeth. I wasn't beaten. Not yet. Resolved, I turned back the way I'd come. I'd only taken a few steps when I just barely picked up on a strange noise beyond the wind. Peering around, I tried to locate the source. Was I hallucinating now? No. The sound was real. It was metallic and clipped, growing louder and closer. Bells. Chapter 11. A dark, blurry shape broke up the white haze, materializing into a sleigh pulled by two grey horses. It drew up beside me, and as the driver leaned down and held out his hand, I recognized the red scarf covering most of his face. Jago waited until I was settled in the seat beside him, and then gave me a heavy wool blanket large enough to drape over a bed. I cocooned myself in it and slouched down. He pulled the scarf away from his mouth, just enough to shout, "Okay?" I nodded. He shook the reins and guided the horses to turn around, but we didn't go very far before he directed them to make a sharp hairpin right. We crept our way down the road because of the conditions, and I had the sense Jago was searching for something. There wasn't much to see, though. I couldn't even be sure where the trees were anymore. Twice he stopped and walked around, holding on to a rope tied to the sleigh. I watched and waited, unable to speak in the wind and snow. When he returned from a third trip down, he redirected the horses to angle left. I felt the terrain below us change. The sleigh still glided easily over the thick layer of snow, but whatever was beneath it didn't lie as evenly as the road had. Minutes later, the shadowy outlines of buildings came into view. With some squinting, I recognized the Cole house and barn. Jago brought us as close to the front of the house as he could and helped me down. He watched me stagger to the door, and then he drove the sleigh toward the barn, soon disappearing from sight. The wind ripped the door away from me as I opened it, bringing a swirl of snow inside. Closing it back up required throwing all my weight against it. Once the storm was shut out again, I leaned back and covered my eyes, panting, scarcely able to believe I was here. With a barrier between me and the elements, the world suddenly seemed impossibly still and quiet. And warm. Not that any of that heat was getting into me yet. My legs trembled, and ice crystals covered much of my face. Tamsin! I rubbed my eyes and saw Winifred and Gideon rush into the foyer. They pulled me into the main sitting area, bringing a chair up to the hearth while Dinah gave the others curt orders for hot water and more blankets. The whole household was here, thankfully. It took me a few tries before I could speak, and even then, my numb lips and tongue tripped me up.
Jaco is outside, I said.
Samuel leaned closer.
Jaco?
Jacob Robinson? Asked Gideon. I managed a shallow nod and sipped at the tea Vanessa handed me.
He found me on the road. I think he's in the barn. I hope he is.
Surely even he's not fool enough to try to go back out in this, said Samuel, exchanging troubled glances with Gideon.
Pounding at the door provided the answer, and Gideon scurried to help Jaco inside. A fleece-lined cap with ear flaps had replaced the wide-brimmed hat I'd seen earlier, and a shaggy fur coat covered his leather one. A layer of snow had turned all of it white, except for that defiant red scarf. He pulled it from his face to accept a cup of tea.
Thank you. I put my team in your barn. Hope that's okay.
Of course, replied Samuel.
We were so worried, Tamsin, Damaris said, wringing her hands.
The other girls nodded anxiously.
I was almost going to go out after you, Gideon added, but the storm blew up too quickly. Samuel didn't think I could make it to town in time, and we didn't know where you were.
Dinah hovered at the room's edge, arms crossed over her chest.
You wouldn't have been caught in it if you'd been home sooner. Why were you late?
Come now, Dinah, said Gideon, a small frown on his brow. I think we can forego any chastisement, given the circumstances.
Dinah's lips pressed into a straight line at the gentle rebuke, but she said no more.
How do you two know each other? Samuel asked Jaco and me.
How indeed? I could hardly tell them I'd gone off alone to bargain with their resident pariah. Luckily, Jaco naturally had no shortage of words.
We don't. Nothing more than a quick exchange of names. I was on my way back from town when I came across her. She told me she was coming here, and it was closer than my place.
He bestowed a smile on the other girls.
I had no idea what company you were keeping here. They're guests of ours, and it's a good deed you've done tonight, Jacob. You are welcome to stay as long as the storm lasts.
Samuel seemed to deliver both compliment and invitation with some reluctance. His eyes fell on me.
And as for you, I hope you appreciate how once again the angels have spared you from nature's wrath.
I do.
I glanced at one of the dark windows as it rattled from the wind. I honestly don't know what I would have done if I'd been out there much longer.
Gideon's frown had deepened.
When this lifts, the council should reconsider the girls' work arrangements, at least for ones like Tamsin and Damaris, traipsing around all over the town. That's safe enough in the summer, but it's too easy to get caught by a storm this time of year. This one was especially sudden, even for those of us who know what to look for.
What work arrangement is this, exactly?
Jago's voice was perfectly guileless, with no sign that he already knew something of our history.
And I hope someone will be so kind as to give me the names of your lovely visitors. I confess, I'm so dazzled by them that I'm starting to wonder if I'm actually still outside and just hallucinating.
Jago's words drew answering smiles from my friends. He was a little disheveled from the storm, but even I had to acknowledge a kind of charm in his cheeky air. Samuel pointed to each of us in turn.
Winifred, Vanessa, Damaris, and, as you know, Tamsin. Their ship ran aground on the eastern coast, and now they're staying with us until they can continue to Cape Triumph in the spring.
Oh, yeah? Jaco asked. What's waiting for you there?
Husbands, hopefully, Winifred explained, a note of intense longing in her voice.
We've worked and studied to become ladies of high culture, so that we can meet distinguished suitors, if any are still available by the time we get there. Tamsin will probably snatch up whoever's left. She never backs down. For some reason, the praise made me feel self-conscious. Come on, I'm alive and well. You don't have to say nice things about me. A mischievous smile crept over her face. Who said I was trying to be nice? I'm just commenting on your relentless nature, which, by the way, I'm glad to have around. It's no wonder we're able to keep getting through these storms and other disasters alive. I smiled back, thinking what a long ways we'd come from that first shipboard meeting. The touching moment was shattered when Dinah announced, "What I wonder about is why you all keep getting into one disaster after another. Perhaps it's some kind of divine punishment." Jago knocked back the rest of his tea and set the cup on its saucer with a clatter.
"Seems more like divine favor if they keep coming through it just fine. You said yourself the angels are looking out for them, Mr. Cole. Maybe your guests are carrying some divine message for the rest of us, and we don't even realize it."
Silence fell. Samuel cleared his throat and said,
"While it's wise for you to consider the way the angels influence everything in the world, interpretation is best left to those more versed in holy study."
"We'd be glad to have you at services some day, if you'd like to learn more," added Gideon.
Jago shook his head with a grin. "Nah. Honestly, I feel more spiritual when I'm working outside in the fresh air. I mean, look around at the sun and the trees, even this storm. Euros made that. The church? You made that."
"Are you suggesting worshipping outside, like the Alansons do?" demanded Dinah, horror twisting her features.
"Oh, goodness. I'm no heretic, Miss Cole. I just live and worship by my own beliefs." "That's nearly the definition of heresy."
Samuel threw back his shoulders and looked on the verge of delivering a sermon. Noticing, Gideon quickly said,
"Now, it's been quite a night. Perhaps we should focus on celebrating Euros, not debating Euros."
Samuel, still scrutinizing Jago, didn't even blink.
"Especially since there's nothing to debate."
"Of course not. I'm just saying maybe we'd all feel better after some dinner."
Gideon might claim he choked up at the podium, but he could deflect beautifully.
"Can you eat, Tamsin? We held off when the storm started."
"That's a great idea."
Jago fixed his grin on me.
"And how lucky you didn't even miss it."
As we adjourned to the kitchen, Damaris took my arm and held me back.
"Tamsin, I feel awful. I wish you wouldn't have delivered those groceries for me. You wouldn't have been running late if..."
"Hush," I whispered, giving her a quick hug. "It's my own fault that I was running late. You needed that rest. Everything worked out, and it was almost worth freezing to death to have Dinah be nice to me. Or, well, just not be awful."
It was hard to poke too much fun at Dinah when she served up another of her excellent dinners. Once I thawed out, I developed a raging appetite and devoured the bean soup and greens without pausing. The others recounted their experiences with the storm, and Vanessa told how she'd walked home with a student who lived far outside of town.
"The snow was just starting, and I'm so glad I decided to talk to his mother about getting a more advanced lesson book. Otherwise, I'd have been worried sick about him getting home. He's so clever. It's a shame they can't afford anything new, but I'm going to create a makeshift reader so he won't be bored."
Jago arched an eyebrow.
"Sounds like you're the clever one. You must be quite a reader yourself."
Her eyes glowed. "Oh, yes, I love it. And I miss it. I used to finish a book every few days."
"No kidding. I didn't realize there was such a scholar behind that pretty smile. And, wait, what? Are those dimples too? Wow. You know, you should keep your mind sharp. If you need new material, I've got a whole load of books I picked up in Sutton. Histories, novels."
"She needs no such things," Dinah interjected. "The scriptures will keep her mind sharp."
"Of course, of course."
Jago fell into eating again, but couldn't stay silent for very long.
"You know, I can't remember the last time I ate something so delicious. Miss Cole, you didn't do this all by yourself, did you? I can taste a dozen different spices. You must have had these girls chopping all day.
Dinah looked startled at the praise, and then, astonishingly, flushed with pleasure.
Actually, I did it all, Mr. Robinson. Cooking is something I take very seriously, and there are only a few spices in there, basic ones at that. You can do a lot if you know how to use them correctly.
Jago let out a low whistle.
My goodness, I'll have to come by with my spice and oil inventory one day. If you've got the talent to create a meal like this out of simple things, I can't even imagine what you'd do with ingredients from around the world.
Perhaps Jago's flattery put her in a good mood, because later in the meal, Dinah reduced the punishment Winifred had received for teaching the blacksmith's daughter to plait her hair.
You're excused from writing an analysis of that passage. Just be sure you remember its message.
Oh, I will, Winifred assured her. I already read it, actually. I adore that one section. Remember your heart. Remember that others love you for it, not for your power or accolades. The conventions of man may lie, but the heart will tell the truth.
Jago set his fork down with a clatter, and I wondered how many more shocked reactions he could contrive in one meal.
What a musical voice you have. Do you sing?
Not often. I prefer playing.
Her musical voice became melancholy.
I miss the violin I used to practice on back at Dunford. Hopefully I'll have my own when I'm married.
Well, I have a lute for sale. Hardly the same thing, but some of the principles are similar. With your astonishing skill, you could practice before going south and then dazzle your suitors. Not that you won't already. In fact, I'm sure you'll have so many, you won't even be able to keep track of them.
Samuel sighed loudly.
Mr. Robinson, did you hear nothing in that quotation?
I heard a voice that made me think one of the six angels had come to recite for us, Jago replied gravely.
Damaris put a hand over her mouth to hide a laugh.
The passage was about guarding against vanity, and yet here you are, feeding into it by constantly doling out flattery to these girls, while also encouraging materialism with your incessant attempts to hawk your wares.
Can't help the selling. It's in my blood. And I can't really hold back the compliments either, not when there are so many worthy recipients.
Jago made a sweeping gesture around the table.
Besides, I've got to win over people with whatever skills I've got. I'm not as fortunate as Mr. Stewart there, able to enthrall with just a glance.
Gideon started at the unexpected acknowledgement.
I'm sorry, what? I'm not criticizing, Jago said amiably. Just stating the facts. One of us has to work a lot harder to win the attention of young ladies. Give you a sword and some wings, you'd be Kiriel made flesh. Me, I get called cute, but never dashing.
Samuel froze mid-bite, unable to believe what was transpiring at his table. Meanwhile, Gideon was blushing so strongly, even his ears were pink. Dinah sprang to his defense.
It's Gideon's fine character that earns him attention.
I can believe that. He's one of the finest people I've ever met.
Jago sounded sincere.
But you probably figured that out early on, Miss Cole.
Oh, yes, she said, thinking she'd scored a victory. I could tell how fine he was the moment I saw him.
The moment you saw him, eh?
Mm-hmm. I figured as much, said Jago.
I looked down at my plate to hide a smile. Damaris, catching the joke also, kept her face serene, though laughter filled her eyes.
You sell yourself short, Mr. Robinson, she said. I think if you grew your hair out a bit, you'd be quite dashing.
Jago put a hand to his heart.
You think so? I never thought about that. Sounds like you've got quite the eye for style. I have a mirror that this meal is over.
Samuel shoved his chair back with a screech and stood up.
Jacob, we'll make you a bed in the front room. The rest of you girls, help Dinah with the dishes.
Can't Tamsin be excused from it? Asked Vanessa. After everything she's been through tonight, look how chapped those hands are.
Most of that's actually from the laundry, I said,
touched by her concern. But if they recovered from over 10 years of it in Asphro, I'm sure they'll bounce back from, however long we're here.
There's no shame in showing the marks of honest labour.
Dinah studied me, and either because she was still upbeat from Jago's compliments, or simply thought the others might judge, she said,
"You may rest by the fire, Tamsin."
Jago followed me to the hearth and looked out one of the windows while I settled in a chair.
"Quite a storm."
"Are you talking about the one you just made over dinner?" I asked.
He laughed and settled in the chair opposite me, turning it around so he could rest his chin on its back.
"I like to keep things interesting.
That's all. Seems like you could go a little easier on your poor host in the process.
Seems like you could go a little easier on your poor saviour."
I think he used saviour to bait me, but it wasn't far from the truth.
"Thank you for that. I had no idea where I was.
On the edge of wandering into the southern woods." His levity disappeared. "When I found you, you'd gone off on a small track that branches from the creek road. I just barely caught sight of you as I was coming. A bit of luck there. Or divine favour." I shuddered. "And here I was worried I'd just passed the house.
Six. Why did you come looking for me at all?"
"When I realised there was a storm coming, I didn't think you'd make it back here before the worst hit. So I had to go."
The teasing twinkle in his eyes returned.
"I've got more heart than you think."
"I won't apologise for what I said earlier, even if you did save my life."
"Understood." We lapsed into silence, and I stared into the crackling fire, watching the gold and orange flames with their hearts of blue. When I glanced up, I found Jago studying me.
"What?"
"I should have given you the ribbons," he responded unexpectedly.
"Most of your hair was covered up earlier. If I'd seen it all like this, I would have handed them over for free."
"You're just saying that because you want to save face now that you know I gave Orla the arnica for free."
He leaned his cheek against his hand, his grin widening as he regarded me sideways.
"I'm thinking you might have a little heart too. Your friends seem to think so.
If you weren't so busy trying to make a sale, you'd have heard them call me relentless.
I heard them fawning all over you, and I heard Damaris sounding pretty grateful on the way to dinner."
I groaned.
"Were you eavesdropping?"
"Nope, just in the right place at the right time, to make me wonder if maybe there was more to you storming into my house than a selfish need for champagne and silk. Maybe you were there for your friends as much as yourself. And then that makes me wonder if I should be on my guard. I mean, I hear you don't back down. Are you going to come after me again?"
"You bloody wish I was coming after you, Mr. Robinson."
I held up my hand to cover a yawn. I was getting too tired to indulge his banter.
"Don't trouble yourself any more. I'll find a way, just like I always do."
He lifted his head and examined my hand.
"What did you mean about 10 years of laundry?"
"I worked for my ma. I told you she's a laundress."
"No, you just said she ran a business."
"She does. Unless you think that doesn't count as a business."
The tone of my voice wasn't lost on him.
"Of course it counts. I guess I imagined other sorts of businesses. A fine dress shop, an event planner. I wasn't thinking of anything so...
gritty?" His customary smile flickered back to life.
"Gritty? Not the word I'd use. But when you told me you were off to waltz and dine with Cape Triumph's finest, I figured you must have already had connections to get a ride like that."
"A ride?" I straightened up, suddenly awake. "I'm not here because of a ride. I'm here because I worked hard, because I scraped and clawed in Asphro, and then poured all that was left of me into being the best at Blue Spring. You have no idea how much I've sacrificed for the pleasure of sitting across from you right now, Jago Robinson, and I'll be damned if you, the bloody heirs, or even this weather, is going to keep me from what I want."
It was a harsher response than he deserved. I knew he hadn't actually meant to offend, but it all just burst out of me before I could stop him. I was bone weary, and the weight of this last 24 hours, Damaris, Jago, and the storm, was finally getting to me.
Jago watched me, his face serious but otherwise unreadable, and I wondered if I'd shocked him to silence. That seemed pretty unlikely. And sure enough, a few moments later, he began. Look, if you... Oh, hello? His green and hazel eyes focused on something behind me, and his expression became light-hearted once more. Mr. Cole, Miss Vanessa, pull up a chair and join us. Panicked, I jerked around, expecting to see Samuel condemning me to Oziel's hell for my language, but his stoic expression told me he hadn't overheard. Vanessa stood behind him, quilts in her arms. "We'll clear some of this furniture and make you a bed," Samuel said. Jago stood up and stretched. "Thank you, sir, but if it's all the same, I'll sleep out in the barn tonight." "It's freezing out there," I protested. Was this another joke of his? Jago responded with a wink. "If the horses can survive it, so can I. I'll feel better keeping an eye on them, and Mr. Cole will probably feel better having me out of the house." Samuel stiffened. "I wouldn't have made the offer if I didn't mean it. Our duty under Euros compels us to show compassion to anyone who needs it." Jago tilted his head and stroked his chin in a sign of exaggerated contemplation. "Is it compassion if it's duty? Shouldn't compassion, by its nature, be freely given? And if memory serves, isn't who needs compassion just a matter of opinion, anyway?" Gideon slipped in to hear that last bit and see Samuel's answering glower. Moving deftly between the other two men, Gideon asked pleasantly, "Jacob, will this be enough to keep you warm? I'm sure we can find extras." Jago eyed Samuel a bit more before turning to Vanessa and her blankets. "That's more than enough, thank you." "You're hardier than me," she said. "We slept outside a few nights on the way here, and I felt like an ice block each morning, even with that massive bear fur Tamsin got along the way." "How so?" Jago layered on his coats. "Did she relentlessly hunt one down?" "She traded with the Balanquins for extra things to keep the rest of us warm. She handed over her favourite gown, this lovely green silk that..." "Enough," I scolded. "It's just a dress. And stop before you give him ideas. He'll try to sell me something."
"Who said I was thinking that?"
He was all bundled up now, about to wrap the scarf over his face. "But if you do need more dresses, come to me first. Good night, ladies. Reverence." He took the blankets and disappeared through the doorway to the foyer. Several seconds later, the wind burst in as he opened the door and was then shut out once again. Samuel stared at the doorway, opened his mouth to comment, and then shook his head. He stomped off to the kitchen, Vanessa hurrying after him, when Dinah called her. "It's always interesting around here," I muttered to Gideon. He cocked his head, listening to the wind. "I wouldn't have minded it being less interesting tonight. How long do these storms last?"
"Usually a couple of days. I've seen them go as long as a week."
"A week?" I repeated, aghast. "What would someone on foot do?" It was easy to feel mad about the travel delay when I thought it was done unnecessarily. To understand it, to see for myself that the reasons were sound, it just made everything that much more depressing. We both grew quiet, but I could see Gideon building up to something. His eyes looked everywhere but me. "Tamsin, did Jacob Robinson really find you on the road, or had you already gone to see him about getting to Cape Triumph early?" Gideon might be mild-mannered, but he wasn't oblivious. I hesitated, wondering how severe the consequences were for visiting Jago. I didn't want to lie to Gideon, though, and something told me he knew already. A little of both. I went to see him and got caught in the storm on the way back home. He came after me when the snow started. Surprise flitted across Gideon's features. "Interesting. Well, what did he say? Can he get you to Cape Triumph before spring?" "No." I sat back down and felt the earlier disappointment flood me. The Ikori would actually have been the ones getting us there, but it would mean Jago would have to stay behind and lose some of his profit. I offered to compensate him, but he still said no.
"Ah."
Gideon settled down in the chair Jago had been using, flipping it forward again.
That's more what I'd expect. I'm sorry.
Why is there so much friction with Jago? I asked. Is it just because of his personality?
It's a lot of things, I suppose.
Gideon leaned back and sighed.
One is that Jacob sells things, some of which aren't legal to sell in Greshand. He gets around that by having clients meet him over by this tributary of the Quistamack, about a mile or so out of town. When the colonial charter was set up, Greshand and Archerwood both wanted that water route, and were granted joint ownership. So if he's making a sale on its banks of something illegal here, but legal in Archerwood, he can dodge any repercussions.
I laughed before I could stop myself. I'm sorry, I said, seeing Gideon's surprise.
I shouldn't have... It's just very clever, that's all.
Maybe devious is a better word? What kinds of things is he selling?
Rum and wine come up the most.
Gideon managed to make disapproval still look radiantly handsome.
And then whoever he sells it to usually gets drunk and ends up getting punished by the council. But Jago gets off on technicalities.
I can see why that'd be irritating, but is that really so bad? Drinking definitely can cause trouble, sure, but it's not like Jago's out there killing scores of people or anything.
No, not yet.
Gideon's expression took on an uncharacteristic grimness.
But he might be doing it any day now.
Chapter 12.
Gideon, stop it! There are enough reasons for people to dislike him without spreading horror stories and accusations. But even as I spoke, a chill ran through me at the solemn look in Gideon's eyes. It is a story, right? Like Dinah saying we're being divinely punished.
Gideon took his time to answer. It's a story in that, no, it hasn't happened yet. And no, I can't predict the future to say that it most certainly, without a doubt, will happen. But he set us up for it.
You're going to have to back up. I know Samuel wouldn't have let Jago in here if he might just turn around and start killing us without warning.
That's true, Gideon admitted, and I should have been clearer with my choice of words. If people die because of him, it's not that he'll be doing it with his own hands so much as his actions, but he'll do it. Just the same.
Gideon, I'm getting there, I promise. When he first rented his place in Constancy last fall, he was always looking to make a sale, just like now. Once he'd found a place to rent, he paraded around a lot of goods we don't see much of, one of which is an herb, bitterroot, that grows on the southernmost coast of Adoria. It makes a pretty powerful medicine that can treat a lot of things, and for some illnesses, it's the only thing capable of working. It's vital to have on hand in the winter. There have been plagues in Adoria that can wipe out a whole town in the span of a week.
What happened? I asked, my voice coming out as a croak. I didn't like hearing about damage caused by a shortage of medicine. It hit too close to home, dredging up memories of how hard it had been getting the medicine Mary needed to treat her cough. Jacob had a supply of bitterroot in his inventory and made a deal to hold on to it for the winter in case we needed it. We would be the only ones allowed to buy it. But then...
Gideon stared into the shadows, his thoughts lost in the past.
But then, the Ikori offered him a huge sum of gold if he'd sell it to them. And he did. He broke his agreement with us because a better deal came along. Now we have no protection. We've been lucky so far this winter, but if any plague or fever strikes, well, we'll just have to pray.
Can't you get more from someone else?
Not easily. We have to import it from the southern colonies, and even there, it only grows in late spring and early summer. It's scarcest this time of year, and if you even can find it, sellers mark it up dearly. A sickening feeling twisted my stomach at the continuing similarities to my own life. My family had frequently felt the sting of selfish apothecaries inflating the price of Mary's medicine. The thought of that happening on a larger scale, to a whole town, was appalling. Recalling some of the abominable practices I'd seen, I asked,
Did he try to coerce you into paying more than the Ikori, like start a bidding war?
No, he just absconded with it one night.
Seems like someone who's so proud of his negotiating skills and hungry for gold would have pushed his advantage.
Maybe the Ikori offer was just too generous to pass. He was still getting gold from them long after it happened.
Jago had told me himself he was a businessman, but I hadn't really grasped the full extent of his drive for profit. That joking exterior hid a nature far more calculating and ruthless than I could have imagined. Did the council do anything? It was still technically his, even though he'd promised it to us. So he was punished for deception, not theft, and had to pay a fine for the breach of sale. That's all that could be done, short of banishing him from town. But he sells enough other critical things that the council grudgingly agreed to let him stay on.
Gideon scooted forward and rested one of his hands on mine as he peered anxiously into my face.
Are you okay? You look so upset.
I'm not. I mean, yes, I am. Who wouldn't be? I've seen what happens when... Well, anyway, it's just an awful thing he did. My first impression of him wasn't so great, but after he helped me in the storm, I figured I should give him more credit.
And maybe you should. A little. I mean, I don't think he's an evil man. I don't think he wants people to suffer. He's probably more inclined to help others, just like he did tonight. But I also don't think he can look beyond his own goals enough to consider the consequences of his actions to others.
Gideon's eyes glittered in the firelight as he deliberated. At last, he proclaimed,
"When it comes down to it, I believe Jacob Robinson sold our medicine out of greed for himself, not maliciousness for others." "That's not going to matter to someone who dies of a plague," I snapped. "That's not going to matter to some mother whose child..." When I choked on the words, Gideon squeezed my hand tighter. "You're right, of course, but it matters to Euros and the angels. At the end of days, a crime born of petty selfishness will be judged less harshly than one born of deliberate menace." I slipped my hand away and stood up. "Then they're more forgiving than I am." The snowstorm was gone by morning, and Jago with it.
"He left just before you came downstairs," Winifred told us as she brought biscuits to the table. It was her morning to help with breakfast. "Shoveled the whole area between the barn and house. He must have been up since dawn to do it." I had mixed feelings about having missed Jago, particularly since I now had mixed feelings about Jago, period.
"A nice gesture, but it's probably just as well he's gone."
Samuel walked over to a frosty window and rubbed his fingers against it.
"Can't imagine having him underfoot if the storm had lasted longer."
Gideon entered and caught that last bit.
"It may be over, but we're still snowed in until the roads are cleared. I'll start shoveling after breakfast."
"Sounds like today will be an excellent time for a thorough house cleaning," declared Dinah. "I've already made some lists of how we'll divide up the work."
The other Glittering Court girls and I exchanged dismayed glances as we sat at the table. After the prayer, Gideon said in an overly casual voice,
"Dinah, if it's not too much trouble, would you mind adjusting Tamsin's workload to free her up for part of the afternoon? I have a number of sermon drafts that need recopying. I've marked them up with so many corrections that they're barely legible. Today would have been a good day for me to do it, but shoveling has to take priority now."
Dinah set down her fork.
"Why, Gideon, if you needed this done, you should have just asked me. I would have been happy to do it for you."
"This household depends on you," he replied smoothly. "I wouldn't dream of taking you from your duties. You're too important. Besides, Tamsin's just come out of very rigorous schooling and can hopefully catch some of my spelling and grammar mistakes along the way."
"I should think so. She scored perfectly on all our composition and rhetoric exams,"
Damaris added unexpectedly.
"She knows all about exposition and persuasion. There's probably no better assistant to help you write those sermons."
I looked at her in astonishment. Samuel swiftly said,
"Copying a sermon is not the same as writing one. She most certainly wouldn't be doing the latter."
But I see no harm in her cleaning up your drafts, assuming Dinah can spare her.
Damaris piped in again. I'll help with any extra jobs.
Very well, then.
Dinah spoke with obvious reluctance, but the other's expectation was too great for her to go against. But not until this afternoon. Later, as Damaris and I scrubbed the larder floor, I demanded,
What was that all about? There being no better assistant than me.
She flashed me a grin, much like the one she'd had when challenging the sailor to a knock contest.
Are you saying someone else would be better?
No, of course not, but I don't follow what you were doing.
Just getting back at that bitch, Dinah.
Damaris spoke in a low voice.
She's mad for Gideon, you know.
Is she?
Yes! If you weren't so busy doing other people's chores and surviving blizzards, you'd have noticed. I'm certain it's why she hasn't married yet. I found out that she'd been considering some proposals, but stopped when Gideon moved in. My guess is she's holding out for him, for when he finishes his studies and becomes a senior minister. But from the way he looks at her, or doesn't look at her, she's going to keep waiting.
Wow, you've taken a lot of time to think about this. I dipped my rag into our bucket of water and wrung it out.
And where do I fit in?
Damaris sat back on her heels, eager for a reason to take a break.
Well, even you must have noticed how huffy she gets when he talks to us. I think she's jealous that we can all get caught up in stuff she doesn't know about, like life back in Asphro. And she gets extra put out because he talks to you the most.
He does not.
Oh, really? When's the last time he gave me paper or invited me to be his secretary?
He didn't specially seek me out for that. It was just something that came up when we were talking about his sermons the other day.
Exactly, because you guys are always talking. Now, back to last night. You should have seen the way he went on and on about you during the storm. I thought he was going to defy Samuel and head out after you. And, oh, Dinah, she didn't like that at all. I'm pretty sure the only thing that made her more upset than him being worried about you was when you showed back up alive.
I rolled my eyes and returned to scrubbing. Dinah may not like me, but even she doesn't want me dead.
I don't think she does either.
Unless she starts worrying that all that bonding time of yours poses an actual threat to her plans.
Then thanks for endangering my life by going out of your way to get me more bonding time with him.
She dunked her rag in the water with a flourish, splattering both of us.
Had to be done. I mean, I hope your life really isn't at risk, but if it is, then take comfort in knowing it's for the noble cause of getting her back for making me copy that damned book all night.
Oh, well, if it's noble, then sure, that's fine. And here I was worried you were doing something petty, like trying to off me to reduce the competition in Cape Triumph.
I never thought of that,
she said wonderingly, lifting her eyes from the bucket.
You see, that's why you're on top, Tamsin. You come up with ideas the rest of us don't.
I almost choked on my laugh.
Well, if you like that, here's a few more gems for you. First,
I glanced behind us.
Don't get caught calling A Testament of Angels a damned book around here. Second, and I seriously mean this, don't provoke her, or any of them.
Damaris' expression sobered.
She deserved it for taking your paper.
I almost felt like crying, thinking of the loss of those letters.
It was like another wall had been slammed between Mary and me.
It's just paper, Damaris. We need to stay on these people's good side. She gave a snort of amusement and returned to scrubbing with a wry smile.
That's assuming we were ever on their good side to begin with.
After a small lunch, I settled down by the fire with stacks of Gideon's papers, unsure what to expect from sermons written for the heirs of Euros. They turned out to be more interesting than I'd imagined, and I quickly understood the problems Gideon had been trying to explain. His message in each one, be it honesty, faith, or hard work, eventually came through, but he meandered around before getting to it. Some lines shone with his passion for the topic. Others were stilted and clumsy. I cleaned it all up as I wrote out the new copies, making better word choices, cutting the mundane, and rephrasing what needed clarifying, or just a little more polishing. The work was engrossing, and I barely noticed the time going by until Gideon came inside for a break 2 hours later. His face was flushed from the cold, and melting snow sparkled in his hair. I urged him to a chair, and then scurried to bring him hot tea from the kitchen. He brought the cup to his lips, pausing just to savor the warmth. "Thank you."
"You're frozen through," I exclaimed. "I wish I could grab a shovel and help you out." "I couldn't allow that, not after you were almost swept away in a blizzard last night. It'd be cruel to make you shovel what very nearly trapped you." "Actually, I'd feel like I was getting back at it. Its attempts to block our roads are no match for me." He laughed and set the tea down.
"I doubt many things are.
My goodness, have you done all that already?"
I followed his gaze to the stack of corrected sermons. "I hope it's been helpful. You'll probably read them and regret ever getting me involved."
He took the top page and skimmed it, his misty blue eyes widening.
"Wow. Is that good or bad?"
"It's..." His silence left me uncertain until he looked up with a big smile.
"It's amazing. Look, right here. I spent paragraphs trying to explain this, and you did it in just a few sentences. I could never do anything like this."
"You were the one who did do it. I just tightened it up and moved things around."
He picked up another page. "Okay, I did this one. Fear can bind you up and block off parts of your life. You need to recognize that and not let fear inhibit the way you want to live. And you did this. Fear is a cage, and we are our own jailers."
"I might have gotten carried away with the metaphors," I admitted.
"No, it's great. It's like you understood what was in my head and translated it."
Happiness lit him from within, making him look as angelic as Jago had hinted. But then, that glow dimmed.
"I can't use this. It isn't right. Maybe most of it is my intent, but you've had enough of a hand in it that we've blurred domains. Has anyone explained those to you?"
"I've heard the term here, but didn't realize it was something special."
Gideon glanced around, ascertaining we were alone. "Domains are how we divide our responsibilities, the work, duty, and crafts of everyday life. Some jobs anyone can do. Some are only for women, some for men."
A memory of our first night here flashed through my mind.
"Is that why the doctors here are women?"
"Yes," he said, delighted at my deduction. "Healing is a woman's domain. So are weaving and dyeing, but tanning and cobbling are men's.
And let me guess, writing is a man's domain."
"No. In fact, the teaching of essential worldly education, writing and arithmetic, for example, is a female domain. Whereas spiritual education," he gestured grandly toward himself, "is a male domain. That's why I told you not to say anything about this plan. It could be misinterpreted."
I picked up one of my corrected pages.
"Because I can help you improve your craft, so long as I'm not actually doing it."
"Exactly. That's ridiculous."
"Oh, sorry," I added quickly. Gideon was so personable that I became too comfortable around him sometimes, forgetting his role as a minister in constancy.
"But if someone gets hurt, and you're the only one around, you can't help? Or if you do, are you going to have to stay up all night copying out scripture?"
The angelic smile took a rueful twist.
"When you put it like that, it does sound ridiculous. Yes, I could help. There are always allowances for special circumstances. But in general, we follow the domains in everything we do."
He glanced longingly at the pages.
"In a home like this, discipline and minor infractions fall to the lady of the house to manage. Samuel and I have no say. Something bigger, say if one of you tried to recruit followers to a new god, would threaten the larger spiritual well-being of the town. That's a male domain and would fall to Samuel and me."
"You said teaching grammar and writing is okay for a woman, right? Then think of me as being your instructor. All my proofing and editing are just teaching aids, showing you ways to improve your craft. And you can read over what I did to make sure I really didn't change any of your meaning. If so,
change it back.
That's a bending of the rules worthy of Jacob Robinson, Gideon said with a chuckle. But I suppose it's okay if you aren't actually inserting new or radical messages. His eyes drifted again to the sermons, and I found his moral conflict oddly endearing. Most people